brought to you by WakeMed Women's, caring for women at every life stage. Find a doctor, schedule appointments, and more. Download the WakeMed All Access app today.
Heads up, listeners, this episode is about sex, and we are really getting into it. This may not be the episode you want to listen to with your kids nearby, just saying. When I was growing up, Chris Haskell lived across the street from me. He had a half pipe in the yard, and he liked to surf. I had a huge crush on him. He and my older brother were friends and would hang out a lot. I would always try to be around, of course, when they were together. And because I was the annoying little sister, I would pester them all the time. And Chris would always say, "In your wet dreams, you'll never get us in trouble." And I'd say, "I don't wet the bed anymore." Did I mention I was 9 when all of this was happening? Well, Chris would laugh so hard, and then he'd tell me to go ask my mom what a wet dream was. So one day, I did. At the dinner table. With 4 of my brothers, also at the dinner table. So right after I asked my mom and stepdad what a wet dream was, they asked my brothers to leave the table. Which they did, of course. But they only parked themselves in the couch, which was 8 feet away. So my mom and my stepdad then proceeded to tell me the birds and the bees, while my brothers were snickering behind me the entire time. But you know what? I found out what a wet dream was. Sure did. And I also found out way more than I bargained for. Well, guys, even though we have talked about sex before on the podcast, I still have questions. Sex is a big topic, so let's jump in, shall we? Dr. Jenna Beckham is in the hot seat today to answer my questions about sex. Welcome. You've been here before. This is your second time on Sarah Has Questions.
Yeah, I'm so excited to be back. Thank you for inviting me to come again.
Tell everyone, remind everyone what your title is. What kind of doctor are you?
I'm a board certified obstetrician gynecologist.
Okay. Well, we're talking today about, this is sex part two. We covered a lot of sex back in season one. And so obviously we had more questions because sex is a very complicated topic. It's got so many different facets. How does women's sexual health evolve as women age?
Yeah, you know, I think there's probably a sort of generic answer to that, but in reality, every person's sexuality is unique and very different. And there are some people who will tell you, well, I feel like my sexual desires really peaked in my older age. I think we sort of culturally and socially have an expectation that old ladies don't really have sex, but, you know, they do. They still have a sex drive. There are certainly physical changes that can, you know, impact some of our sexual pleasures and sexual behaviors.
Well, but like what?
Like dryness of the vagina. So we know once you go through menopause, you don't have that estrogen that the ovaries produce. And that is something that results in vaginal dryness, which can result in a lot of discomfort with some sexual activities and sexual behaviors.
Okay. And so lube is your best friend.
Lube is your best friend and estrogen. You know, I mean, something you obviously need to talk to your healthcare provider about. But it's because your body is lacking the estrogen from the ovaries that you can actually use estrogen as an insert or a cream, a gel
into
the vagina.
Oh, I didn't know that. Yeah. I thought it was all pills.
Right. And that's what a lot of people think about and are sort of like, oh, I don't want to take hormones. They've heard these horror stories about, you know, hormone therapy being really dangerous. But actually, hormone pills or the patches or things like that aren't really intended to treat the, they call it genitourinary symptom or syndrome of menopause. But, you know, vaginal
genital
dryness.
Genitourinary
really...
syndrome of menopause.
Yes.
Wow, which rolls right
well,
off the
all
tongue.
Right, easy to say, right? Even I'm having a hard time saying it, you know. Vaginal dryness is much easier to say.
Okay.
But really, topical estrogen in that area is the most effective.
And how often, I mean, do you have to do it right before you guys have sex, or do you do it like in it kind of like allergy medicine? It builds up over time.
Right. It really should be a maintenance medication. Usually you start more frequently when you're first getting, you know, initiating the therapy, but then it's just kind of something often you'll do once or twice a week. A lot of times I have my patients do it at night, especially if they're using the inserts or the creams. Sometimes it can, you know, cause some discharge. So it's better like sleep through that. But the absorption of the estrogen lasts beyond that. So it's not something you need to do like right before sex. If you're using it continuously, you should have those benefits.
What are the most common sexual health concerns that you get from your patients in general?
Yeah, I'd say the most common, the one we just talked about is
vaginal dryness.
A really common one, you know, particularly as I mentioned for patients who are postmenopausal. I think that, you know, in general, patients don't like to bring up sexual health. So sometimes it's not a common
Well, what's funny is that, you know, whenever we decided to do a episode on sex, you know, we got a WakeMed who we consult with when we choose doctors suggested an OBGYN or a gynecologist. And I was like, I honestly never thought to ask them about it. I thought there would be a doctor just about sex.
Right. Yes.
And you are that doctor.
Turns out. Yes.
Turns out.
Happily, actually, you know, but I think not a lot of people knew that. And there's pretty good evidence that patients just don't really bring up their sexual.
It's so intimate and vulnerable.
Yeah. But I think pain with sex is a really common, you know, concern. And a lot of people don't really know if it's normal or not. And I think feel self-conscious about bringing it up. You know, sexual pleasure, ability to have orgasm, you know, having a lot of not people feeling like maybe they don't have the sexual desire that matches their partner, mm-hmm. having concerns about that. Those are kind of the most common, I think, sexual related concerns I hear from patients.
Let's just define sexual dysfunction then, because that's what it sounds like you're talking about is the things that are quote unquote wrong with their sexual function. So what exactly is a sexual dysfunction?
Yeah. So I think that for me, the most important aspect of sort of what we say like diagnostic criteria, when we're thinking about any kind of condition, there's several components that you think about for sexual dysfunction. To me, and what I tell my patients, the most important part is if it impacts their quality of life.
Okay.
Because it's not a dysfunction if they're happy. You know, there are asexual people. There are people who have no interest in engaging in sexual activity. If that is their choice and they feel content with that, that's not a dysfunction.
Yeah.
If someone wants to be really sexually active, wants to, you know, have orgasms, then and they're not able to, then that would be a sexual dysfunction.
I see. Okay. So it's very, like you said earlier, it's very personal.
Absolutely.
And I think the more we go along the medicine road, as it were, we're finding that all medicine is super personal. Everybody's
Absolutely.
Body is so different.
100%. And really, at the end of the day, it's about that individual person's experience, and it's my job to help them, you know, achieve the goals that they really want, particularly when we're thinking about sex.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think number one, knowing that you can ask your gynecologist about sex is huge.
Yeah.
Let's talk about low desire, because I know a lot of people have low desire, and I know, like, with menopause, you hear about it, but also, like, when you're premenopausal, different times of your cycle can cause low desire. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and not to sound like a broken record, but really, again, people are different. Some people feel, you know, certain spikes of hormones maybe make them feel more sexually stimulated.
Randy.
Yeah, versus others. We also see it in pregnancy too, different parts of pregnancy. Some people, when they're pregnant, will say, you know,
I got to jump in here because I remember I'd be like, oh, you're pregnant. Have you been wanting to do it? And I was like, I feel like an elephant. Get off me.
Right. Again, back to that very unique experience.
Yes.
You know, some people are like, absolutely not.
Yeah.
Do not come near me.
And
others
are like, oh, yeah.
I can't stop.
Yeah.
Right? Like, so it's just so different. And we do think there's some hormonal component to that. But, you know, it's so interesting that those same sort of hormone spikes impact different people differently.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So when you're ovulating, it makes sense that you're going to want to do it. Then why the next week do you want to push your partner off real hard?
Yes.
So like, get off me.
After you're ovulating, you know, that's when you have a different spike of hormones in your body.
Okay.
And a lot of times it's sort of if people have any of those sort of like premenstrual symptoms.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, between ovulation and having your period, that would be the time where you might be having that bloating, those cramps, right? Those things that are triggering our body saying, hey, the period's coming.
Yeah.
And those symptoms a lot of times make people feel like, oh, I don't feel good.
Yeah.
You know, I don't like it. People say, I want to eat chocolate and french fries and, right, just
which
like.
Which I don't even understand that because I've asked a doctor, but why? Why are we
trying? Who knows?
You don't know either.
I don't know either.
Okay,
yeah.
Okay. That's good to know.
Yeah. But I think that's a lot of it is sort of related to those premenstrual symptoms that people have that they're just not feeling, you know, super comfortable. They may have discomfort, not feeling that sexually aroused.
Are there people studying? Because, I mean, we've had a lot of doctors on the show at this point, and sometimes they're like, I don't know. And a lot of it is with women's health. So are they studying these individual hormones now more than they used to be? Are they going to tell me why I want Pringles and Hershey's Kisses right before? Are they studying
these
things?
Let's hope so. I don't know about a Pringles or, you know, Hershey's study, but I do think there is more attention being focused on women's health, reproductive health. You know, I mean, nationally, there's some money moving towards it, we've heard on the news. But in general, compared to a lot of other health conditions, it historically has been underfunded. And it's just not, I think, as interesting to which we could probably have a whole nother episode on that.
Yeah, oh my God.
I'll try to stay focused on the sexual health topic.
Yeah, like every episode ends up me being infuriated by the fact that women never were studied. I'm like, did you not have a mother, a wife, a daughter, or just a friend? Like, aren't you curious?
Aren't you just curious?
Yeah,
yeah. Well, you know, it goes back to the science of a lot of our things in medicine have these weird words related to, like, you know, hysteria of women, right? And our symptoms of sort of being thought to just be all in our head, which we all know now is not the truth, but we've got some catching up to do in the medical research.
In 2024,
sadly.
Shocking.
Yes.
I'm going to shift topics real quick. What exactly happens when you orgasm physically? I mean, I know spiritually in my mind, a portal opens because you got life coming through.
Right?
But as physically speaking, what happens? Why is it so freaking awesome?
Yes, it is freaking awesome. Agreed. you know, a variety of things. So we kind of think about, you know, head to toe things in the brain or in the body. So there's a lot of hormone triggering being released in the brain.
Like what hormones?
Like oxytocin, serotonin, you know, these are sort of like happy hormones, right?
Right.
Can make you, that are part of that portal opening feeling of like, oh, there's that mental stimulation part of it. And then physically, there's some, the uterus can sort of have some contractions, which is really like, ooh, contractions, not necessarily like labor contractions. It's not really painful, but sort of that muscular sort of spasmy, you know, a lot of the words I think have even sort of negative connotations, but some of that muscular feeling, you know, certainly in preparation for orgasm, you have clitoral enlargement, increased lubrication. Sometimes people have sort of a, you know, increased kind of pulsatile discharge, almost like we think of like our male counterparts having a release.
I think that's called squirting.
Yes, there you go.
I'm going to say
there you go. I'm like, I don't think there's really a medical term for that.
No, we all know that
that's
term.
Right.
So that's what goes on. All right.
Yeah.
Well, and why do you think it is that women, and maybe I just don't know this, women have two ways to orgasm. You can penetrate somebody and then you can, you know, the clitoral.
Yeah.
I'm failing in my words right now. So why do women have two and it seems like guys just have the one? Or am I wrong?
Well, you know, women actually have multiple ways. You know, I think those are the kind of the most common sort of when we think about genital intercourse. There are people who can orgasm with stimulation of other parts of their body, like their breasts or their nipples. But yes, often we think about, you know, using the vagina and the clitoris being one and the other sort of internal, which, you know, people call it the G-spot.
Which by the way, I want to know, is that real?
I mean, it's real. I don't think you couldn't like dissect a human and see it physically of like, oh, that's what that looks like.
It's not a button.
Not a button. you know, why are they different? I don't think I know the answer to that.
Okay.
I think, you know, probably something inherently related to reproduction because that's what our bodies are, you know, historically were thought to be used for. And that's what sex, you know, even still today in some people, but right, sort of historically was thought to be.
Well, and evolutionarily speaking.
Evolutionarily, right.
Yeah.
It's what, you know,
the whole
benefits.
Point.
Yes.
Benefits the species.
The species, right.
Do you see the same sexual problems with lesbian and straight people?
Great question. It's highly varied, you know, but all encompassing, yes.
Okay.
You know, it depends on lesbian people and other, you know, gender diverse people, how they have sex. But, you know, if they're using their vaginas and having some kind of penetrative intercourse, a lot of those similar concerns can exist with, you know, discomfort, certainly after menopause, vaginal atrophy, things of that nature. You know, some people may engage in different types of sexual activity and so may have other, you know, questions, concerns in that regard.
Okay. We'll be right back because you know I have more questions.
Ladies, when it's your health, it's your decision. And the decision is clearly Wake Med Women's. From pregnancy and childbirth to gynecology, surgery, weight loss, your emotional well-being, and your heart. The care is as compassionate as it is comprehensive. So, wherever your health takes you, a lifetime of highly specialized care and a very good decision await you at wakemed.org.
I have a couple of questions here that come from the office.
Okay. I love it.
Okay, so first, have you noticed different sexual trends through the generations of people? And I'm asking you this because I hear a lot of Gen Zers like butt play. Is this something that you are encountered? Do you get questions about it? Do you offer advice? Talk about butt play.
Oh, yeah. The youth keep me on my toes.
I'm sure.
I love my young patients.
Oh, I bet.
They teach me a lot. I was just talking to someone the other day, and one of my friends is a high school teacher.
Oh,
I can't
imagine.
And so I'm always asking them, I'm like, can you just keep me up to date on the new lingo so I can seem hip with my young patients?
Yeah.
I was talking to the medical students about sort of how I take a sexual history and talking to my patients. And, you know, I ask them, you know, are you sexually active? And then I say, tell me about your sexual activities and your sexual partners, because I want to hear the language that they're using.
Yeah.
Sometimes I have to ask for clarification. I'm like, well, what does that
You're
mean?
You're like,
what body part is that?
What that is.
But I think in general, our young people are pretty sexually explorative and are probably more open maybe than some of our peers, you know, to, as you said, to butt play.
That doesn't surprise
anal sex.
Me at all.
Yeah. I think in general, you know, they're just more comfortable with their bodies. They're more comfortable sort of seeking pleasure and exploring different things, and I think don't feel as culturally repressed about thinking about sex. As,
yes.
You know, even not too long ago, and there's still certainly that exists in society and certain places, but I think a lot of our young people feel a little bit more empowered to sort of, you know, challenge the status quo and yeah, so get into butt play.
Okay, right on. Time out. We would like to avoid having a crucial conversation with any member of the Capital Broadcasting Company HR team. In light of that, I have been asked to read the following statement from management. And I quote, "We do not discuss butt play in the office." We solicited anonymous questions internally for this episode, as we do for all our episodes. Again, no butt play conversations happened in the office. Like ever. For reals. Unquote. Men go through changes as well as they age, but do they also experience low libido? Also an office question.
Ah, gotcha. Yes, although I don't want to answer a lot of those questions because it's not my area of clinical expertise.
Gotcha.
I think any, you know, we can see anytime there's changes in hormones over aging, it certainly can impact libido. And I think men are subject. It's not quite the same as sort of the menopausal transition that we see in people who have ovaries.
They have testosterone. We have progesterone, oxytocin, serotonin, and probably, what is it, prolactin and
right.
all those other
all
ones.
All the things, yeah.
Yeah. And so it's just not
ours
fair.
Is a little more complicated.
We have a soup.
Yes.
They have a spice.
Right. I like that.
So are you comfortable about talking about testosterone at all or not really?
Yeah, I can talk a little bit about, I have, you know, I see transgender male patients. So I have patients who take supplemental testosterone. And then sometimes even other patients, you know, may ask about, or there are some people who take testosterone for sexual health therapy. So yeah, we can talk about it. If I don't know, I'll tell you.
Okay, that's fair. Do women ever take testosterone when they're not transitioning?
Yes. Okay. Women will take testosterone. There's some, you know, again, broken record, not a lot of evidence about it. There's starting to be some evidence in postmenopausal women for using testosterone for increased sexual libido, interest. Yeah.
Well, that makes sense.
Yes. So it's not really recommended or well studied in premenopausal patients. And it's kind of even a newer trend to see it. Some of our guidelines saying, yeah, you should consider it in a postmenopausal patient.
So in a woman's body, does that mean that estrogen or testosterone is responsible for our libido, or is it like a cooked up soup?
I think your soup analogy is a good one. I think we still, you know, when they've looked at sort of trying to trend those hormone levels, are they related? No. So, and it's not when we're supplementing testosterone that we're looking for like a level in the bloodstream.
Right.
You know, I think again, which goes back to sort of every person's experience
is
just so different. But
yeah,
there is some evidence that supplemental testosterone can improve sexual desire.
Fascinating.
And some people will still use it even, you know, off label, and there are places you can access it and
Do you recommend that?
It. No.
It feels dicey.
Yeah, it does. You know, there are people who do a variety of things with hormone therapy, but I think, you know, we have to be careful.
I think under medical supervision
under
is probably
supervision
best.
Under medical supervision and based on some evidence.
And I understand the access to care is getting more and more difficult,
exactly.
So I can see why people seek it out.
Of course, yes.
But yeah. It seems, if you can, someone like you who's open, you know. All right. One last one. And again, I'm not sure you'll be able to answer this.
Oh, yeah.
There's a myth out there. This is an office question.
Okay.
There's a myth out there that for men, sex drains your energy. And I obviously, directly after the act, everyone's exhausted. Right.
Sure.
But this person asked me and said that they've there's that myth that throughout the day, like if a guy has too much sex, like sports players sometimes don't have sex when they're in like a good run.
Oh, yeah, I have heard that.
Is there any truth to this?
I don't know if there's any scientific evidence to that, but I've definitely heard it.
Okay.
I mean, it kind of makes sense, right? Again, we talked about sort of those really extreme kind of peaks of hormone surges. I mean, I think for men and women, right?
Sure.
Even if it's in timed, you know, it's variable how long it lasts, but it is a pretty intense physical experience.
Yeah.
So I think physiologically, psychologically, it makes sense that it would be, although a very pleasurable thing in the moment, could be something that could drain our energy a little
bit.
So
and if you're trying to win a title, maybe you should just hold off.
So, yeah.
I'm not a professional athlete.
Same.
So I don't have to follow anything.
Know, right? Yeah.
All right. Now we're going to listeners' questions.
Right.
I don't know what these are.
Okay. I love it.
So
surprise for
these
both of us.
Are from our listeners. And by the way, if you want to make a question or send us a question, you can do it on our website, WRALFM.com. There's also hints in the notes there for you to follow. Okay, here we are. Are there any specific dietary changes or supplements that can support sexual health and vitality in women over 50?
Great question.
Dietary changes.
Yeah, I think we talked a little about sort of supplements. Dietary changes, not specifically that, you know, help sexual health, sexual desire.
I don't have a Randy Berry.
Gosh, if only. Boy, wouldn't that be, they'd sell out of that at Trader Joe's
shelves
every day, right? The line out the door would be even longer.
Randy Berry juice.
Yeah, I don't think we found any particular, dietary supplements that necessarily benefit our sexual health. I think, you know, in general, eating a balanced diet so you feel healthy, comfortable in your body.
But it'll make you want to do it more.
Yeah, let's hope so.
Okay. I've been experiencing pain during intercourse lately. How do I know if it's just a normal part of aging or if it's an underlying medical issue that needs attention?
I would say it definitely should have attention.
No matter what. If you feel pain.
No matter what. If you feel pain,
it shouldn't hurt.
And there are ways we can help you figure out ways to not make it hurt. Especially, it sounds like from this listener that this is something new, that perhaps it wasn't previously painful. I mean, still, all the same, it definitely shouldn't hurt. But if this is something that you're experiencing newly, definitely see your provider and talk to them about it. It doesn't necessarily mean it's a medical problem. But,
right.
You know, again, with aging, there could be some vaginal dryness. Sometimes we can talk about trying different positions.
Yeah.
You know, just ways that it should be comfortable and pleasurable and it should not be painful.
So I've been hearing a lot about pelvic floor specialists for this type of thing. Are all gynecologists pelvic floor specialists? And how am I going to find one?
My colleagues who I consider pelvic floor specialists are pelvic floor physical therapists.
Okay.
They're my best friends. I love them. I send so many patients there. I mean, you can look in a lot. Not all physical therapy practices do pelvic floor physical therapy.
Gotcha. But they should. That holds up your organs.
They should. It's very important. But they are wonderful and can offer really impressive services, and particularly in people who have some discomfort with sex, with intercourse. They are super knowledgeable and really open to having those conversations also.
That was my next question.
Yeah.
Can I talk sex with my pelvic floor therapist?
Yes.
Okay.
I mean, you know, I the ones I know, absolutely. I would hope that if their area of expertise is in the pelvic floor, that they would be open to talking about that.
Yeah, I mean, it's where it happens.
Right?
And yeah.
It's very important. So yes, in general, they are very comfortable, and I've had patients speak very highly about their experiences and have really positive results.
Okay. All right, here we go. The next one is, I'm over 50. A lot of older women now.
Yeah, I love it.
I'm over 50 with no apparent changes to my period. However, tampons are not as comfortable as they used to be. Even though I haven't been through menopause, could age and vaginal dryness be the cause of that? Or does vaginal dryness start after menopause?
Yes. It can already be happening. If you're over 50, and even if you haven't experienced any changes in your periods, most likely your body's probably in at least the perimenopausal transition. The average age, you know, is around 51 to 53. So, you know, everyone is different. Some people go through it earlier, some later. But even if you're not fully through it or haven't noticed a change in your period, there's probably already some decrease in that estrogen production from the ovaries, which could result in that vaginal dryness.
Just get some lube.
Yes.
Get some high dollar lube, everybody. All right. This one is a great question. We mentioned the Villages earlier.
Mm-hmm.
It's a retirement community in Florida known for having the highest STD rate in the country. So here we go. This is the question. My dad recently moved to a retirement community. To my surprise, he mentioned several cases of STDs among his neighbors. Now I'm having conversations about safe sex with my dad. This isn't a question as much as a reminder that older people are still having sex and we can't pretend they're not.
Yes, I love that. If I didn't yell too loud. Agreed. It's so true. But yes, they are still having sex. We should not pretend that they are not. And good on this listener for having a conversation with their father.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, those of us who care for older adults should not ignore that or make any kind of assumption about their age and their sexual behaviors.
Yeah.
And anyone who's having sex, we should also be talking to them about ways to protect themselves.
I mean, at a certain point, the shoes get changed, you know, like you become the person.
You become, right? And a lot of things we have to talk to our parents about that they probably, you know.
Be the example they weren't for you.
There you go.
On that note, thank you so much for coming
yes,
in today. This
thank
has
you
been
for having me.
Fun. You're so much fun to talk to.
Oh, great. Likewise.
I love Dr. Beckham. She is such a force. And she's saying what every doctor is saying so far on this podcast, which is everyone's body is so different and advocating for yourself is so important. So if you think you're having some kind of sexual dysfunction, like Dr. Beckham said, if you aren't happy, then it is dysfunction and you need to talk to your doctor. And you don't have to be shy about it. Isn't that great? If you have any thoughts on this episode or you have a question that you want me to ask for a future episode, go to WRALFM.com/Sarah has questions. The link's in the show notes. Sarah Has Questions is a production of Capital Broadcasting Company. My guest today is Dr. Jenna Beckham, an OBGYN at Wake Med. To find out more about her or any of the other providers from the Wake Med team, go to wakemed.org. Thanks for listening.